Welcome to Good Things Radio, a lifestyle show about activating your mind, body, and soul to become fully alive. And now, your host, Brooke Taylor.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Hello. Thank you for being a part of Good Things Radio. My name is Brooke Taylor. This is episode number 179, our July episode before we kick into weekly shows starting in August. So how's your summer going? I hope you've had a good time, that mix of respite and fun and sunshine. Lots going on here for us. Summer is not the easiest time, and I feel guilty saying that. Like, who says that summer is a tough time? But for us, it is. With autism, kind of the change in routine, it always takes a minute to adjust. This year has been going well. But too, you know, with a house full of kids 24/7, I have sensory overload sometimes. And, you know, that's the thing is we have younger kids who get up really early, and then older kids who want to tend to stay up later. And so I've actually been getting up at 5:30, 6 a.m. every morning. And that is my sacred quiet time. And that's been a huge help. But once again, I just stand in awe and wonder. And I think, God bless, hats off to the homeschooling moms, because you get it done and do this year round. And it is incredible to me because I've done it too. But I don't think I could do it again. But we have been having fun, of course. We always do the summer reading programs at the library, and I did finish a book. It's called The Enthusiast. It is the untold story of Brother Elias of Cortona and the best friend of St. Francis of Assisi, who almost ruined what he started. And this book has it all. It's a true story. It's a biography, not only of Elias, but also to a degree of Francis and Claire. And it also has, though, true life, mystery and intrigue and drama and what was going on in the church in the Middle Ages, some unsolved questions, and it did not disappoint. So I'm really excited to share with you the interview with the author, John Sweeney. I just had a chance to sit down with him. So I'm hoping a bonus episode for you in July. So stay on the lookout for that, because I really want to get it out to you. It's so interesting, and I think you will like it for a summer read as well. And I'm also right now reading Crime and Punishment by Dostoevsky, which I might be reading next summer too, at the rate I'm going. But it's one of those where I wish I was in a book club, because there's so much to talk about, and it's slow and steady, but I am getting through that one as well. But in the meantime, in lieu of a book club, I do have an invitation for you. So if you are also in the mode where you would like just a day out, this is it. If you are in the state of Ohio, say around specifically Saturday, August 3rd, it is a ladies' day out with my friend, Pastor Linda Isaiah. And the theme is laughter, laughter through tears. You know, we don't laugh enough. We need to do something about that. But we're not, even though we're giggling and we're kind of using that as a form of therapy, we're not skimping on the substance. So it's going to be a great day at, and it's an ecumenical event, by the way, Our Lady of Perpetual Help Chapel, Walsh University. And so Linda will be speaking. I will be speaking. There will be praise and worship by Pedro Chavez. He is the director of liturgical services at Walsh, along with Felicia Landry. She's an opera-trained gospel singer. And the two of them, I cannot wait to hear that combo. And then everything else, the breakout sessions, just a day of fellowship, laughter, community, and it is free. So a big thank you. Free, F-R-E-E. A big thank you to LCI Ministries, which is Linda's ministry, and her team, and then my team at St. Gabriel Media for coming together to make this happen at no charge for the attendees. A love offering will be taken, though, so write it down if you are anywhere near, in, or around Ohio. August 3rd, it's a Saturday, 10 to 2 p.m. at Walsh University. And you can also email feedback@goodthingsradio.com for more details, and we'll get you on the list. So today's topic is a big one. Bioethics, specifically Catholic bioethics. And when it comes to developments in medicine and science, there is no question that we are seeing unprecedented advancements. And some are hopeful, some are very life-giving and encouraging. And then you have the mad science, others that pose these serious ethical and moral challenges to our human culture. So you're talking everything from reproductive technologies, genetics, altering the DNA of embryos, stem cell research, assisted suicide, and transgender issues. That does fall into the bioethics issue, gender ideology. And so we have to be armed, not only for ourselves, because this is happening at such warp speed, but our children and the world that they are going to inherit under understanding natural law. And so today, we're going to talk to a dear friend. She's been on the show. She is a syndicated radio host and also recently back from the Vida Institute. We'll talk all about this. It was held at Notre Dame in South Bend, and she is going to shed some light on what she learned and the recent headlines and what our response should be to these matters. And just for the sake of example, I thought I'm going to go and just pull some headlines from today. By the time you hear this, those headlines will have changed and been outdated, and your feed will be updated. But these are just a few that I pulled that are going to be relevant. One of them, Canada's Ontario province has passed legislation that allows the government to seize children from families that refuse to accept their child's chosen gender expression as young as the age of 7. If the parent isn't accepting that gender expression, that the government can seize their children. And also, this recent story has gone viral about Dr. Joseph Nicolosi and what's happening to his work through big tech. And I'm just going to read a brief portion of the article that American Conservative ran on this because it's important. Pulling it up now, and it starts with, which books can you buy at Amazon.com? Mein Kampf by Adolf Hitler is available. The pro-Stalin works of Stalin apologist Grover Fuhr, an American academic who argues in his books and lectures that Stalin killed no one and committed no crimes. Also, A History of Communism by the white supremacist David Duke. The SS Leadership Guide, translated from the original German. All of these available for purchase on Amazon. A highly influential text by the Islamic radical Sayyid Qutb, which calls on Muslims to wage relentless global jihad against non-Muslims and insufficiently radical Muslims until the entire world is under Islamic rule. You can buy all of these books, but do you know what book you cannot buy? The works of the late Dr. Joseph Nicolosi. And again, a clip from NBC News, Amazon has removed English language books by a man largely considered the father of conversion therapy from its site following mounting pressure from LGBTQ activists. Dr. Joseph Nicolosi was the founder of the now shuttered Thomas Aquinas Psychological Clinic, as well as the National Association for Research and Therapy of Homosexuality. And he offered several how-to direct guides, etc. So do you see what's happening? Amazon now bans the sale of works of an author that LGBT activists find offensive. You can buy the work of Dr. Joseph Goebbels on Amazon.com, but not the work of Dr. Joseph Nicolosi. And you can say, this is unscientific, I don't agree with it, it's a sham. But if that's the standard that we use, they cite this book about healing through crystal therapy, that sheer quackery, but it has nothing to do with whether or not a bookseller ought to sell it. These activists are totalitarian, and this is a dangerous precedent that is being set. And we talked about it with Abby Johnson after the movie Unplanned was released and those accounts being suspended mysteriously. And so just those examples, these developments should serve to remind us that in addition to the many hats that we wear, right, as chef and chauffeur and nurse and all that we do as mother and friend and sibling and father, make no mistake, we are soldiers on the front lines of the souls of our families and children. And I've heard the argument at times from other moms, from friends, from myself, that as parents, our vocation, our calling is to the domestic church, which is true, to form the hearts and minds of our children, that we don't need to go outward and speak out, but rather inward and speak in, not necessarily in the marketplace or boycotting commerce or e-commerce, but to spend our energies forming our children. But I think that we can no longer, it's not an either or thing, it's a both and scenario, that by speaking up and speaking out, we are forming our children, we are teaching our families, and we are reclaiming truth, because this is an act of love here. And the more we wait to speak out, the harder it will be eventually when things are already dismantled and shut down. And so as we get into this interview with Timmery and we hear there is a tidal wave coming that we must be prepared for, especially in the world that our children are inheriting. And I don't mean to launch this July episode ringing the rapture bell. It's not like that, because as always, the greatest victory is won, and we are a people of hope. And it's not a but, and that is why we have to be proud of that and claim that, because the world our children will be inheriting in some ways is unrecognizable to the one that we grew up in. And so our focus today is bioethics. And in the conversation, you'll also hear mentioned about the National Catholic Bioethics Center. I'm going to point you there at the end of the interview. But I just wanted to share, as we set the tone and get into this segment, a little bit about what to expect. Dr. Joseph Meany is actually going to be taking over as president of the National Bioethics Center. And so he was recently interviewed about this new appointment and what we can expect. What are the touch point issues? And this is what he said. There is an unprecedented rapid pace of technological discoveries, particularly in genetics and biology. Catholics should note multiple contemporary ethical systems do not view the dignity of the human person in ways that harmonize with the gospels or church teaching. We know that. He said the greatest challenges in the coming years will be from gender ideology issues, such as sex change surgeries and drugs, and also end-of-life issues, particularly assisted suicide and euthanasia. And again, I'm not saying this to scare you, though perhaps it should, but to rather enliven us to a spirit of action that we have been called to stand in the gap. And so today we're going to talk a little bit more about unpacking those issues, laying them out on the table so that we know what we are dealing with. And my guest today is Timory Millington. She holds a master's degree in exegetical biblical theology, a bachelor's degree in communications media. She is also a Catholic speaker and host of the nationally syndicated program Trending with Timory. If you haven't heard it yet, you've got to check it out. And she focuses on current trends of sexuality, feminism, and gender ideology. Joining us now from California is my friend Timory. Hi, Timory.
Hello, Brooke. How you doing?
Great. Thank you for being on the program.
Oh, it's a joy to be with you.
It was nice because we were texting and what you shared, I'm just so chomping at the bit to share with the listeners as well, because you just returned from the Notre Dame Vita Institute, and that's where the bioethics topics come in. Can you explain first a little bit about what the Vita Institute is?
Absolutely. So we just spent a week with judges, politicians, heads of nonprofit organizations worldwide. There were people from Spain, Malta, Italy present to study very serious issues confronting human life. Issues exactly as you mentioned, including abortion, contraception, and fertility awareness, in addition to physician-assisted suicide, and so forth. So this institute is actually put on by the DeNicola Center for Ethics and Culture, which is headed up by Carter Sneed, who he worked under President George W. Bush on the Ethics Committee. He has testified before Congress and in various states and participated in the writing of very strong pro-life, pro-family legislation across the country. And he brought in some of the top experts to present to us and update us on the nitty-gritty of these issues that are so complicated, but we need to navigate as Catholics.
I think you said it. It is complicated, and it's information overload. Not only is there a broad scope of information, but the depth of the issues you just mentioned there is dense. You are talking social science, biology, theology, law, philosophy, and yet even if we're not scholars in any of those disciplines, we should at least have an awareness so that we can have a response. And that can be tough because it is a lot of overwhelming information. So can you break it down for us? What, I guess, let's start with the broad look, is the current landscape of these fundamental life issues? What's the temperature, the state? How are we doing?
Absolutely. Well, right now we're seeing that, you know, our faith is really meeting the pavement right now in terms of how we navigate issues, whether it's the abortion climate with various states passing very, very pro-life laws, some of the most pro-life laws we've seen in this nation prior to Roe versus Wade, to other states such as Illinois and New York passing a very pro-abortion and permissive laws that are absolutely frightening. And we'll get into later about how it's really lowering the standard of healthcare for women. And then we have issues such as bioethical issues of fertility, and specifically, you know, Brooke, infertility. Infertility is on the rise. Some studies are showing, just on basic CDC information, as fertility begins to decline, we are below replacement level. And I saw a study a few months ago that showed that, in fact, by 2050, the vast majority of men and women will need some type of intervention to conceive. Now, this is really important because at the Institute, the Vita Institute, we were specifically talking about how third-party reproduction ultimately has gone too far. we're seeing that there may be the possibility in the very near future, they're saying that we will be able to gestate a human person that was created via in vitro fertilization, right? IVF, mm-hmm. With a sperm and an egg in a petri dish outside of the loving act of a husband and a wife, and that they will be able to gestate the baby inside of a cow one day.
Did I just hear that correctly? Come again. You said a human baby. So the cow essentially is the surrogate.
The cow is a surrogate. Now, this is a big deal because today I even know some churches and even non-religious people who, hey, I don't want to change my body. I don't want to go through the aftermath mm-hmm. of having had a child. And so guess what? They're looking for surrogates. But that's expensive. And some women suddenly want to keep that baby that they've carried for 9 months. No surprise, they're bonding. And so here we're seeing that the option of having a cow, let's say Betsy, in the backyard gestating your baby sounds like a much less expensive option. And, you know, you don't have to have another person involved here. This is terrifying.
I remember Father Tad writing a column. He is such a renowned Yale neuroscientist, biologist, and with the Catholic Center for Bioethics. And he talks about how IVF in general is a runaway train, and it is just out of control. And to hear something like that sounds like even beyond science fiction. So the reaction immediately, as I hear you, is disbelief, and then, Lord have mercy, what if this could happen? But is that just something far-fetched, or is that something reality that you're saying they've done that we'll possibly be dealing with?
You know, this is something we're going to be seeing in the near future. So, and the person who is presenting this during the Vita Institute is actually Father Nicanor Astriaco. Now, he's phenomenal. You know, you just mentioned Father Tad and the Center for Bioethics. This is really important because these are people who have really studied. I mean, Father Nicanor studied at MIT. He has, you know, really worked in bioethical issues. He's actually a professor of biology at Providence College in Providence, Rhode Island. And he really dives deeply into biology. And he is talking about how really this is the future of the next generation, where we're going to have to be having conversations with our children who are trying to decide whether or not to have a surrogate, what types of maybe IVF they're looking at, or what type of genetic manipulation they're looking to do. You know, maybe it's really being selective and creating human beings and choosing, oh, well, I want my baby to have blonde hair, blue eyes. I want to make sure there's no possibility for disease so we can study the embryo. And, oh, look, there's this possibility where it's received a this bad gene line. So let's eliminate, right? Kill this embryo and let's implant a different one. This is the crisis of what we will face.
There is a quote, I think maybe Aquinas, an act of evil, even if one part of the act is evil. And some may say, well, but the outcome, if fertility rates are going down, as you say, and people are we're trying to reproduce, well, if IVF, you know, in vitro is a way that we can do that, is that so evil? That's often the argument that you will hear. And so the response, the Catholic response, the dignity of the human person, where do we begin with that?
Yeah, the Catholic response, IVF is intrinsically wrong in two ways. One, it takes the dignity of the creation of a new life and denies that new life the beauty of having created it between the act of a husband and a wife, right? A man and a woman. And what happens is we from there see, okay, we created a petri dish, we have an egg donor, a sperm donor. Now this child's being denied the right to its actual biological mother and father. And we could go down the process. Here we're actually intentionally creating life to automatically reject that mother and father from being a right that that child receives. So that's one of the issues that's involved in IVF. Another issue is that when they go through the process of in vitro fertilization, multiple human embryos, human people in the earliest stages of life, are actually created and multiple babies are implanted into the woman's womb. Well, she's having a hard time conceiving or maintaining a pregnancy, or if it's a different surrogate, what happens is often these babies in the early stages of life either die right there in the womb, so it's experimentation, or they say, okay, five babies are developing. Which ones do you want? Do you want the boy and the girl? Do you want the two girls? And then the other ones are, quote unquote, eliminated, but right. actually aborted. So that's where this continues to step into another realm, not only of experimentation, but intentional killing of a human life.
So for the layperson listening, is the most powerful thing we know always is prayer. It is becoming educated. But what is a further action step that we can do to step in? Is it just continuing that dialogue, teaching our children this so there's an awareness of natural law, the dignity of the human person, and what we need to do to preserve and protect?
This is a great question, and it has to start with, first, just because we can do something, does that mean we should? And that's where the question lies. And in order to answer that question, we have to bring a fundamentally really implied idea of the human person into the conversation. And that's different from a current secular worldview, that the human person has intrinsic value. You are valuable for who you are, not what you do. And so as we walk through this conversation, I really think the conversation needs to come back to this respect for life. And that when we go into experimentation, look at all of the negative outcomes, whether it's thousands of frozen embryos that we have a crisis of not knowing what to do with.
And I think, too, it comes back to a society that has been groomed and conditioned to eliminate anything that's uncomfortable or unpleasant. If I can't conceive, well, then I will find a way to acquire a child through whatever means. If I am diagnosed with a terminal illness, well, then I will expedite something so that I don't need to experience the suffering and pain. And I'm not in any way minimizing those crosses and those sorrows by any way, but I think there again, that's why it's so important that we spotlight and hold up redemptive suffering, and that all things have meaning and can't be just sterilized and created. And on the other end of the humans are a commodity issue, acquiring babies through embryonic, you know, gestating the human baby in a cow, and that whole thing is abortion, is eliminating life when it's inconvenient. So here again is another example. I don't want a baby right now, therefore I'm going to eliminate what makes me uncomfortable. And I'm not saying that those decisions are cut and dry and easy, but these laws we're seeing, as you referenced in the top of the show, have a lot going on, from the New York law to Illinois to then on the other side, the ones that we're really excited about, like in Georgia. Can you break that down a little bit? What's going on? What are we seeing that we need to be aware of there?
Let's talk about the good stuff first here, because we need to celebrate this. We need this as people who are fighting for the right to life, for family. In Alabama, for example, we just saw this law passed that essentially if anyone tries to perform an abortion, that provider could face criminal charges essentially underneath the Alabama law. Now, here's the falsity that I want to touch on. I just debated with three women who were pro-abortion on Jubilee Media's forthcoming video called Middle Ground. And they kept trying to say, well, yeah, women are going to be facing jail time if they obtain an abortion, or let's say if they even have a miscarriage and have a DNC medical procedure that removes the baby that's died through miscarriage. I said, oh, absolutely not. That's not what the law says, right? And we have to have this conversation, because the media and people who are pro-abortion actually believe this or are using scare tactics. Mm-hmm. No pro-life law is going to punish the woman who's trying to obtain that abortion. We acknowledge that the culture today has created a society that has impacted the conscience to tell a woman that she has no other options and that child killing is necessary and okay. And so we go after the provider.
And how many rosaries have been prayed and ongoing faithful, whether it's cloistered women before the Blessed Sacrament or grandparents outside of abortion mills, and to see this really is truly a victory.
You know, I was just talking to my mom yesterday, and we were talking about how I don't understand why people are so apathetic, even good Christian pro-life people, to the point of not doing anything. Say yes, like our Blessed Virgin Mary really assented to receiving our Lord. And that, yes, will equip you through the grace of the Holy Spirit in ways you never would believe.
Amen. We just had a great episode with Father Nathan talking in general about the gospel message and people feeling hesitant more than ever, just ambivalent, and maybe some miscommunication about evangelizing and proselytizing. And there's two different things. And in our polarizing time, sometimes people just don't want to step into the fray. But when you have something beautiful to tell someone, it should be proclaimed. And so I love that reminder, and that we are seeing eyes opened and ears, you know, hearing the truth and the good news. Now, on the other side, I know you also heard, or you shared in the Vida Institute, the story of 180 CEOs writing a letter saying abortion restrictions are bad for business. And you can take it from there. Can you tell a little bit more about what that's about?
So 180 CEOs are now commenting with, and never once mention abortion, but they refer to empowering people to thrive. They refer to comprehensive reproductive care. And essentially, I am quoting this. This is, quote, bad for business, these pro-life laws. Why? Because it's throwing maternity care back on the companies. Because they're saying, you know, it's bad for business. It's preventing diversity. It's making it so that we can't recruit top talent. They want contraceptive and abortive women to be in the workforce so that they don't interrupt the workflow.
I think Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg should be all over this, and the feminists. And where are the feminists? Is there any outcry from that side? I mean, you talk about stifling a woman's freedom here.
You know what, Brooke? This is what the pro-abortion or very radical feminist mindset refers to as the bad type of patriarchy. And I don't want to get into the semantics of patriarchy, but what they view patriarchy is, which is sexist, oppressive, this is what these CEOs are showing. And let me remind you, it's predominantly men, that women need to change their bodies and abort their children to be a part of the workforce. Motherhood is something that is actually, and I hate this word, but empowering. You know, I was just looking the word up the other day, yes, because it's said so often, but what does empowering mean? It means to make you stronger, to make you more confident, to give that strength.
I want to touch on, because we could talk about this another few series, installments, and episodes, but we have just the concluding part of the show here, and I want to turn our attention also to end-of-life issues. We're focusing on from the womb to the tomb. And so physician-assisted suicide, those rates are rising. The debate continues. And I know that was covered in the Vida Institute. Can you touch on what was shared there?
Yes. And I'm actually going to throw a resource out there. You can check out, coming up available at my website, radiotrending.com. I have some of the experts who were at the Vita Institute, including Richard Dorflinger, who has been instrumental in writing pro-life policy specifically addressing the issue of physician-assisted suicide. But here we are. I'm sure you heard the story about a month and a half ago of a young girl in the Netherlands who was raped, is I think 17 or 18 years old, and after years after the rape, story said that she ended up ending her life through physician-assisted suicide. It ended up coming out she starved herself to death. She had the right to end her life in the Netherlands via physician-assisted suicide and ideas of euthanasia that are open there. Here in the States, we are seeing slowly, state by state, passing laws that allow for a person who is facing a terminal illness to end their life. We are saying today that I get to end my life on my own terms. There's a difference between a lethal dosage of drugs to end your life and, let's say, a little bit of morphine to help with pain, but it's not a lethal dose. We're at the point where we are justifying the killing of our family members and of ourselves. And the most, I have to say, although difficult, beautiful moments of life, mm-hmm, at the end of life where there's conversion and transformation and making peace with God and people in our lives.
I saw a quote from Richard Dorflinger from the Vida Institute where he said, "The battle for death has already been won. We're just out here trying to help people understand this is true. Life, mm-hmm, has the final victory." And so I think it ties in exactly to what you're saying, but it also speaks to our greatest fears. And that is, we don't want to suffer. We don't want to see our loved one in great agony. And so, of course, this debate rages on from Terri Schiavo to before, and it will. And so where do we enter with sensitivity, with charity, mercy, and love to explain this?
I think, honestly, it starts with telling stories. We're living in a time where the boomer generation, this is something Richard Dorflinger pointed to at the Vita Institute, has actually grown up the first generation disconnected from their grandchildren. You know, they have a vacation home on the other side of the country. There's all this justification for why they're not involved in their grandchildren's lives. And then you have their adult children saying, oh, well, you know, they weren't around when I needed them most to help me. You know, maybe it is the best thing to just allow them to die via physician suicide, or maybe to euthanize them, although that's not legal in the States. Here's the reality. I think we need to tell stories about good deaths. We need to talk about death, but more importantly, we need to talk about life after death. Mm. And when we default from what is true, from the fullness of truth, and Christ, who was on that cross and was sacrificed for us, that there is value in that redemptive suffering. And that's not saying that you just need to suffer to the very end. It's saying that there's value in those final moments with family, friends, caretakers. And there's a redemptive value, yes, in your suffering as well. God willing, surrounded by your loved ones to the very end.
So what for you as a recipient of the Vita Institute in listening to this conversation, did you jot down as far as notes? I love that what you just said there, the value of stories, the value of testimonies, and the witness to life everlasting. This is the good news that we are sharing in a setting where you're talking to someone who maybe is removed from a belief in God or eternal life. Where is our meeting place there? How do we begin to say there's just fundamentally something ethically, morally wrong about taking a shortcut and playing God and putting the power in our own hands? Now, again, this, we're not talking about hydration. We're not talking about pain management. This is the act that we're talking about, that final assisted suicide.
You know, I think it comes back down to addressing the idea, and this goes back to all the issues we've been discussing today, of absolute autonomy. We are living in a time where we justify everything as okay because I am an autonomous individual, free to do whatever I want. That's not the reality of life. You're born into a family with a mother and a father. We are social human beings connected to others. And when we choose to end our life via physician-assisted suicide, we are disconnecting and breaking all relationship and actually devaluing the people who love us much and we love. Even if we're trying to say, well, I don't want them to have to pay for this. I don't want them to have to see me suffer. Actually, it is good for family members to lean in and help out. This is the same thing with helping a girl in crisis pregnancy. We need to stop being so to the point where we're divorcing ourselves from any human contact and dependence. Dependence is a good thing, and we cannot allow ideologies, a utilitarian ideology such as John Stuart Mill's, to reign, where we kind of have this idea that, oh, we're just going to save money and save other people through ending our own lives. Mm-hmm. There is value in our relationships and our person intrinsically.
Oh, there's so much to consider as we are called forth to grasp the understanding of this, not just one topic again, but all of these topics that will affect us, our families, and generations to come. And we are on the front lines. And as we wrap up, what can you share that was a positive takeaway and hopeful note?
We are seeing across the nation, people are fighting for life. There's a wave, I think, especially in strong Christian Catholic communities where they're wanting to have big families. Women are wanting to raise their own children. And so I think these are beautiful and great things. We're seeing resources such as fertility care awareness following natural family planning, as we'd refer to it, where women are discovering respect for their bodies through beginning to understand how their bodies function in the monthly cycle and how, you know, they can achieve pregnancy or maybe for legitimate reasons avoid it for a period of time. These are great things. And we have to look at the map of the United States. The reality is that we still have 29 states prior to 1997 that have already and still do ban physician-assisted suicide. And since 1997, we've had over 11 states who are passing laws to protect life at the end of life. And so we also just saw the AMA, American Medical Association, who just said, we are still on the side of life regarding physician-assisted suicide, and we do not approve it, which is a huge win because in the past, the AMA has taken a neutral stance. So for them to say no to physician-assisted suicide is still pricking the conscience of doctors to say, absolutely not. I take an oath to protect life, not to end it.
Amen. And I think that is also a reminder to pray for our physicians, pray for these bioethicists and all those really every day who are thrust into these debates, and not just in a theoretical way, but in a very real life, tangible way, especially in the medical field, our nurses. So continued prayers for them and their vocation, their call. And we want to also find you. Can you give us a website or how we may connect with you, Timmarie?
Of course, please reach out to me. I'm at radiotrending.com. You can find me on Facebook.
You are a brave, fresh, powerful voice for the church, and I'm just so thankful for you. God bless you, and thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you again, Timmarie Millington. And I would also again like to point you to the National Catholic Bioethics Center. It's the NCBC. So not only can you find the latest news and resources, they even offer, I love this, actual consultations, individual consultations by a credentialed bioethicist so they can walk with you if you are dealing with an ethical dilemma personally involving a healthcare or the life sciences issue. So again, that website is ncbcenter.org. Much to ponder, much to pray about, and entrust our nation to God's care and Our Lady under the patroness of her title, the Immaculate Conception. Would love to hear from you. feedback@goodthingsradio.com if you have an opinion, if you have a thought to add. And you can also leave a voice message via the free app Voxer. I love Voxer. And so you can find me at Brooke Taylor and the number one. And of course, you can always sign up for our newsletter. Do that just easily by texting the word Fiat, F-I-A-T, Fiat, yes, Fiat, to 66866. You just text that, you'll opt into the newsletter, and you'll get all the updates, including the information about the Ladies' Day Out and two upcoming pilgrimages for 2020. One to the Holy Land, February 22nd through March 3rd of next year during Lent with Brother John Michael Paul, and one to Ireland next July with Monsignor Jay Clark. And again, just text Fiat to 66866 if you're not already in the newsletter hopper. Thank you so much for being a part of the show, friends. And also be on the lookout for that bonus episode with John Sweeney about the book, The Enthusiast. More details will be in the show notes. Until next time, friends, God bless you. Peace and love.
Good Things Radio is a production of St. Gabriel Media. Adventure, encounter, evangelize. To find out more or to schedule Brooke to speak to your group or parish, visit brooketaylor.us. That's brooketaylor.us. Good Things Radio is a production of Coming Home Studios, produced by Mark Cumming. Find out more at www.cominghomestudio.com.